Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. My name is Paul Taylor, and I am the president of Evolving Wisdom, one of the organizations producing this event. Tonight, we will be taking another stride in this remarkable public conversation on the leading edge of consciousness and culture. We'll be investigating the mystery of how becomes us, how I becomes us, the issues surrounding evolving together. It is essential that we bring higher consciousness, not just into our lives, but into our world, and that we come to more clarity about how our spirituality can enable us to make a practical difference. The deep and probing dialogues Terry Patton has been conducting in the Beyond Awakening series are certainly moving that process forward in a remarkable way. One of the key themes that has emerged is the question of cooperation and collaboration, which we'll focus on today. It's profoundly inspiring to be engaged in a leading-edge conversation that almost 30,000 people are participating in. And if you are hearing this and would like to access the other dialogues in this series, please go to beyondawakeningseries.com, where you can sign up and receive the information you need to download the series introduction and our first few dialogues, and to receive links to participate live in the new dialogues as they take place. I want to point you to our blog at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. This is where you'll find the schedule for the next couple of months, and you'll also find links where you can download the dialogues that have already taken place. You'll also be able to exchange thoughts with some of the other members of our community and see some of the questions they're interested in. The conversation that began there will be migrating very soon to a brand new community site. I'll be announcing more about that as soon as it's ready to go live. The second place I want to point you to is our emails. That's where you'll find the links to participate live. If you don't see your emails, please check your spam folder and add us to your address book. Please make sure that you're set to accept emails from Beyond Awakening Series at evolvingwisdom.com. Another way to engage is by joining our Facebook group. There you can find links and announcements, meet other members of our worldwide community, and engage in ongoing discussions. Just click on the Facebook link in the email we sent you today, or go to beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook. So now it's my pleasure to introduce you to Integral Spiritual Practice founder Terry Patton, who is the visionary behind the groundbreaking series, as well as our host. Terry Patton is a vital leading voice in the fields of integral evolutionary practice, leadership, and spirituality. He speaks and consults internationally, inspiring, challenging, and connecting integral evolutionary leaders and institutions worldwide. A gifted communicator, community builder, successful entrepreneur, educator, and author of four books, Terry has worked for over three decades as a philosopher, activist, coach, and teacher, helping leaders embody higher consciousness in practical actions that transform complex systems. He is the author with Ken Wilber of Integral Life Practice. His personal website is integralspiritualpractice.com. And now I'd like to welcome Terry.
Thanks, Paul. And hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into this and especially for caring about this inquiry, for taking it seriously. This conversation is authentic and significant and meaningful in part because all of us are partaking in it. And at the end of the call, we'll open up the phone line so we can, at least for a few seconds, hear just a few of the voices of the almost 30,000 people who have registered to participate. Tonight, it's my delight to be welcoming the best-selling author, psychotherapist, and community builder, Catherine Woodward Thomas, in a conversation we're calling Evolving Together. This teleseminar series was conceived to convene a conversation about how our spirituality can evolve to enable us to rise to the challenges of our time and to create a cultural transformation, really, because we're in the midst of a time in which a profound transition is required of the whole human species. For us to go to a sustainable human presence on planet Earth requires a cultural transformation, and that's really a spiritual at its root. You know, many of us were inspired to make our commitment to our spiritual growth, in part because we wanted to make a contribution to something larger than ourselves, and we felt that a higher level of consciousness was going to be part of that. But it isn't always obvious exactly how those connections are really laid out. How does our meditation, how does our spiritual practice really deliver on that promise and help us be a part of our world transformation? Somehow we all sense that we have some responsibility personally and that our spirituality connects to that. So in the introduction to this series, I described how in the advance and the explosion of human knowledge, a synthesis is emerging, and it really has to do with the evolution, how the cosmic process and biological evolution and cultural evolution are all really headed somewhere. And taken together with the crises that our world is in, it recontextualizes our spirituality. So I've had a series of conversations. I talked with Ken Wilber about the higher states and stages of human consciousness and how we may be at the dawning of a new integral age in the next few years. I talked with Michael Murphy about how an embodied spirituality that actually transforms the flesh based on practice may be key to all this. And I talked with Andrew Cohen about the evolutionary impulse and how there's a kind of ecstatic urgency that is a new kind of enlightenment, perhaps. Claire Zammit and I talked about the awakening of a new feminine power and a new feminine spirituality. I talked with Gangaji about how awakening to absolute freedom in consciousness relates to acting on our relative responsibilities as citizens of a world in crisis. And in our very last call this past Sunday, I talked with Dr. Rick Hansen about how we can manage our brains with our minds and how the paranoid trance that our brains are easily lured into can be eluded, and how we can change our minds for the better so we can be more effective. Today I have the pleasure to be talking with Catherine Woodward Thomas. And Catherine is a very accomplished woman. She's the national best-selling author of the book Calling in the One, a licensed psychotherapist, and the co-creator and co-leader of the Feminine Power Transformational Courses and the Feminine Power Global Community, which serves tens of thousands of women worldwide. She's a very creative and inspired transformational teacher. She has 20 years of experience designing and facilitating seminars that support the emergence of life-altering shifts in consciousness, both individually and collectively. She's worked with both men and women, but has focused in some of her work on women specifically, and as a part of that, co-created the highly acclaimed Women on the Edge of Evolution teleseries, which is a series of conversations that engage the biggest questions that are facing women today regarding their role in co-creating the future of our world, and has featured many of the world's preeminent women luminaries, thinkers, artists, and change agents. But speaking more personally, something I really love about Catherine is that she is able to be soft and strong. She leads in some ways with her heart in a way that's vulnerable, and yet she's clearly called and may really be embodying a new model of leadership because she's unselfconscious about showing up in a way that's vulnerable, soft, and feminine, and yet at core very, very clear and very potent. And what she's manifested is really evidence of that. She's another thing that I really like is that her care really leads her work. She's made mutual support and community and our topic today, evolving together, why we need each other to become ourselves fully. I love that. So this very caring, loving, and generous heart is obviously at the core of her work, even though on another level she's, taking names and kicking butt, really making a lot happen. So she's very strong even in that softness. So it's really a delight to have her with me today. Welcome, Catherine. I just want to offer you the most wholehearted welcome to this program.
Thank you so much, Terry. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be here engaging this with you today, and how really honored I am to that you've invited me onto your series. Thank you.
Well, great. I'm really happy to have you here, Catherine.
Mm.
You know, in the past, we've had some conversations where you've talked with me a little bit about what really motivates you, what's really behind your calling, in a sense. And I've found it moving to hear the vision that motivates you. So I wanted to ask you right here at the beginning to say something about that sense of calling and vision.
Mm, thank you. Well, there's certainly a very strong vision that my teaching, Claire Zammit, who was on a couple weeks ago as my teaching partner, and there's a very strong vision that we're standing in and really called to create in the world, which has to do with empowering women really worldwide to start to realize their greater potentials and start participating in the co-creation of the future of our world and making their greatest contributions. But I think, you know, if you ask me on a personal level, where that really started for me was when I was quite young. I was very, very fortunate to begin to have spiritual experiences when I was very, very young. I was about 14 years old, and I started to have transcendent experiences, which I had no language for, because it wasn't necessarily something that I'd grown up with or in a family that had these kinds of experiences. It was really out of the blue and very shocking, but very meaningful and very real. And it aligned me on a very at a very tender age with the evolutionary impulse to, I think, to develop and to develop spiritually in a very relational way. And what I mean by that was when I was 16 years old, I was walking to school one day. And I was praying because I, as I said, I'd been having these spiritual experiences since the age of 14. And I began to have this this transcendent experience where everything became illuminated, and I suddenly was present to the world if we all woke up to this deeper level of care and a deeper level of relatedness with each other. And I was so filled from head to toe and vibrating with this sense of aliveness and dynamic co-creativity and deep levels of love that was across all barriers, that I just wholeheartedly devoted myself to that. And that has really, on some level, become the anchor and the grounding upon which everything really has manifest in my life, because it's always been my North Star, is to realize this and to realize it not just for me personally, but to realize it for us collectively.
So that vision that you're describing, this is kind of like people really, in a sense, loving one another, seeing and wanting the best, seeing with eyes that see the divinity in one another and therefore evoking it in one another. Is that the core?
I think so, but, you know, it's so interesting because on some level, I think what my journey has been a demonstration of the gap between that ideal and that deep desire and even the devotion to have that experience and the actual lived experience of my own capacity or lack thereof to sustain that state. And I think that I've really lived that journey quite acutely. When I was 19 years old, I have another personal story to share with you on this journey. When I was 19, I was drawn to go to Bible college. I was a Christian at the time. I was a very devout Christian, although I did not come from a Christian family, so my family didn't understand this at all. They wanted me to go to university, and I was quite righteous about it, you know, in the way that teenagers can be, and, you know, really defiant, and went off and kind of alienated my family in the process, but went off to Bible college to become a missionary because I wanted to give my life to God and to do that in a way that was in service to other people. And so I was praying very, very deeply and devoutly that God would use my life for something beautiful and noble and truthful and to bring forth these deeper levels of love in the world. And I went through this period of about 6 months, spending at least an hour in the day just begging God to use my life. And so my my expectation was that life was going to be very exciting. I was going to start to get, you know, offers to go to some exotic place and become a missionary and minister to people in a way that would really foster love in the community. And so I was really excited and inspired. And what happened instead was just disastrous. I mean, I went through a series of heartaches. My boyfriend of many years just up and married someone else. My best friend turned against me and took our whole community with her. My parents, as I said, I completely alienated myself from them. And the eating disorder that I'd had when I was younger just, in all of that, just became very, very active. And I ballooned up to almost 200 pounds. I have a pretty petite, tiny frame, which is, you know, gaining all this weight, not able to stop eating and stop being addictive, you know, in my relationship with food. And I plunged into this several years of darkness and isolation, no friends, completely, you know, anxious all the time and incapable really of functioning very well. So I left Bible college, to say the least, but I lost faith. And I not only lost faith, but I became very angry with God. And I thought, well, you know, who's this God? What are those prayers were naive. They were foolish. Obviously, God doesn't care about me and my prayers. And so I literally shut down and stopped speaking to God, stopped praying, and went through a period of about 6 years where that was so, and they were very dark years. And probably in my mid-20s sometime, the eating disorder got so bad that I found myself in a 12-step program, Overeaters Anonymous. And it was a great program, and I resonated with it, and I identified with the people, and I thought it was fabulous, but I had a big problem, because the problem is with the 12-step program, it's a spiritual program, and it's based on prayer. And I had not spoken to God in 6 years at this point. So I kind of gathered all of my wits about me, and I said, okay, you're going to have to do this. You have to open up this dialogue. And one night, in a moment of great courage, I got down on my knees, and I bowed my head, and I said, okay, I need to do this now. And I uttered my first prayer, which was, F you, you know, because I was so angry. But it got us talking, right? So it got me talking again, and it was the beginning of coming back into relationship with that divine impulse within me and that beautiful foundation that I had created as a young woman. And little by little, I started to really recover. But what was extraordinary about that time is that I recovered really inside of the power of the group. And so I had been, you know, obviously I'd been trying to figure out my problems by myself, you know, for a long time. And I'd even gone to therapy and tried to analyze my problems to try and get better. But nothing was really working for me. And it was really inside of this experience of the, you know, collective field of Overeaters Anonymous and the 12-step programs that I started to recover. And the wonderful thing is by the time I was in my mid-30s, I actually had worked so hard that I disappeared the eating disorder. I actually got well. And I kind of graduated myself from the program, and I was so grateful to be relatively sane, relatively healthy, able to function properly as a normal person, that I said to God, okay, I want to do something for you. I want to do something beautiful for you. What can I do? And I prayed this prayer, what can I do as an offering of gratitude? And I listened, and I prayed, and I listened for every day for about 6 weeks. And it was about 6 weeks in that I suddenly got it, like just a realization, clear as a bell what I was to do. And at the time, I was a singer and a songwriter, and I went down to Skid Row. I live in Los Angeles, and Skid Row is a, you know, big part of downtown Los Angeles. And I went into one of the missions, and I said, I, you know, would like to create a CD of music that is co-created with singer-songwriters who are professional in the music industry and some of the men and women who are living here and in the early process of recovery from homelessness. And they trusted me with that, and they gave me a group of 18 men and women to work with. Now, I had never made a CD. I had never run a creative writing. I'd never done any of this before. But when I get an impulse like that, I'm obedient to it, so I follow it. And within a few weeks of just meeting every week with this group and creating and designing this program that was really about kind of evolving together, we're telling our stories together and we're weaving the hope that's in the story and we're offering it to others and we're preparing for these writings to become songs, people in the group started having these life-altering experiences. I mean, really, really startling. I mean, the recidivism level for the homeless population is very, very high. But this group was really thriving, and I tracked the group for about 5 years, and I had an 80% recovery rate of people who stayed off the streets after participating in this program I created. But what happened is that in the middle of that, I had this epiphany myself, and I realized in an instant, I went, oh, my God. The plunge into the belly of the whale, those dark years, was not God abandoning me, but in fact, it was the answer to my prayer, right? Because I saw that I had been forced into this path of development, this path of evolution and growth, which really catapulted when I went into, you know, this work with the 12-step program in the collective field. So there's so much that I learned from that experience. And, you know, since then, now, you know, you were saying I have the good fortune of now being a teacher of tens of thousands of people inside of the transformative work that Claire and I have created, the Feminine Power Work. And a lot of it is based on what I learned back then and obviously what she learned because it's such a co-creative, collaborative partnership. But certainly this area, this aspect of the need to develop, to actually be able to sustain those peak experiences of consciousness, right? So I had these peak experiences when I was young, and I could see it, and I could see the truth, and I could even show up for a time inside of that. But, you know, in the lived reality that I was living, you know, here we are, the vision is the love of all humanity, and here I was struggling with profound self-hatred, you know, and an inability to form, you know, relationships with people and let alone, you know, generative relationships that were mutually empowering, co-creative, you know, going to foster the evolution and the development of all of us. So it's been really an amazing experience to see what has become of it. And I think tonight, you know, we really wanted to talk about this phenomenon of this ability to come together, particularly inside of our conversation, the urge that so many of us are feeling to really give our greatest gifts to contribute to the transformation of consciousness and culture right now.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that background. So in some way, it was the way that the Overeaters Anonymous group supported you that first keyed you into some of this group work, but then in your own spontaneous work at first, kind of in response to the sense of wanting to give back and having those amazing experiences with the homeless folks, that you began to get that you could catalyze something important for people and began to gather a sense of a vision about doing something to create a kind of profound intimacy among groups of people and mutual support, and that in some ways this community building that you've been doing came out of that whole background. That's what I'm getting from your stories. Is that, am I?
On a very deep personal level, but I don't think I had quite all of the distinctions about what had really been working for me until I met Claire Zammit, my teaching partner, about 6 years ago. And our relationship really has become the foundation of this entire feminine power global community, of this real evolutionary partnership, this evolutionary sisterhood that we have really created together in collaboration. And I think so. It's more than just a coming together and being intimate together. You know, a lot of us have the impulse to come together in community. And particularly in our world, our Western culture in particular, where we're so isolated from each other. I mean, you know, for those of us feeling alone, we are not alone in feeling alone. I mean, it's just epidemic and really contributing to a sense of deep anxiety and depression that's kind of epidemic. So it's not just about, though, coming together in community and being together. It's really this context in which we're coming together. that I think activates the power of the collective field. Like, what's the overall purpose of the group, and what's the agreements, and what's our ways of relating? And that's what really starts to create this container for development. And most of us really haven't been fortunate enough to have the experience of being able to come together in this way as partners in our own development. You know, usually if you really look at most wonderful communities, you know, the delicious communities that we all love and need in our lives, but most of them are really organized around support. They're either organized around comfort, which is great, or they're organized around support groups. And none of that is off or bad. They're all necessary. I love, you know, my supportive communities, but they don't necessarily activate the power of the collective field, which really catapults development. And I think that's what we've really been working on.
Why doesn't the support group catalyze that power fully?
Well, there's something that happens when you move from, you know, hey, go for it. You know, you tell me what you're up to, Terry. And I'm like, well, go for it, Terry. You know, I really, that's a great thing to do. You know, high five. And I'm right with you. To Terry, I am standing for you. I am standing with you and for you to really be your partner in causing that to happen. And it might be, and so I'm going to be an evolutionary partner. So, you know, the things that we actually want to realize, you know, our highest potentials realized, there's a gap between who we are now and who we would need to be being in order to be really hitting it out of the ballpark. And that gap is the development that we actually need to take on and the evolution that we need to be striving for and efforting in our lives. And so, you know, in and of ourselves, you know, we're living in this very masculine, hyper-masculine kind of system of power where the ideals are autonomy, right? The ideals are really kind of the Lone Ranger myth, you know, standing in our, you know, ourselves as, you know,
rugged individuals.
Definitely. You know, the Lone Ranger, we're going to pioneer something into the world as an act of like the noble hero. That's kind of the archetype that we have for that kind of striving. And
yeah,
yet,
the lonely meditator alone on his cushion, in a sense, is that too, perhaps. And
well,
the inner development of the individual.
Absolutely. And I think most of us have really been struggling, you know, in isolation to really grow and develop ourselves and to even to bring forth our greatest gifts and talents into the world. And even though we do have supportive friends, and some of us, you know, are very fortunate to have very loving families, many of us still don't feel like we have the kind of support that's actually critical to being able to grow ourselves in order to bring forth the gifts that would really make the difference in the world. And then what's even, you know, worse about that is that we then pathologize ourselves for not being able to do it. We judge ourselves for being weak, or we don't have what it takes, or something wrong to us, as opposed to the recognition that we really are interdependent creatures, and we actually need each other to flourish and to thrive. And so what we've really discovered in the feminine power teaching is we cannot become ourselves and bring forward our full gifts without the co-creative evolutionary partners of other people who really are standing inside of the same commitment, standing inside of the vision, share our vision and our values with us.
Well, you know, this resonates powerfully for me because it's become a strong intuition for me over this, really, especially passionately over the last 10 years, that something like a cultural transformation seems necessary. We're dealing with such profound challenges as a species, and we're at a kind of a crossroads in history where an enormous transformation, you know, for us to, you know, the UN is predicting there's going to be something like 9.6 billion people on the planet by 2050, and we're hearing all kinds of things from our scientists about how unsustainable the human footprint is on the globe, and we you know, we can't even agree on doing something about global warming in the United States. You know, how can our cooperation become powerful enough? And it seems like our spiritual practice has to become almost a movement, but the level of mutual trust that that would require seems so out of reach. You get together with a group of, even a group of activists who are trying to create positive changes, and you don't see that kind of coherence. People don't trust each other. There are often, you know, long arguments in which people are kind of stoutly defending their own different points of view. And for us to achieve a kind of coherence as groups is critical to us meeting this moment of evolutionary challenge. And that's one of the reasons that I feel like this theme of evolving together is potentially really important to this conversation that I've convened. And I know you have, in some of our past conversations, expressed a sense of calling about this and a feeling that there's some kind of magic that's been happening in the communities that you're leading, where some you know, the competitiveness among women is famous, and something about that seems to be yielding to something else in your work. And I'm just curious about that. I want to understand it better and understand how that can translate to all of us, you know, between men and women and between many more people.
Oh, I'm just so excited to hear you speak about this, because this is really at the heart of what we're doing in the Feminine Power Teaching. It's the whole reason why we created this 9-month mastery program that we've got starting next month, and or in a couple of weeks, actually. It's really this ability to create an environment where we can come together and develop our skills and capacities in order to really show up as capable of navigating this passageway to, you know, to where we need to be in order to bring forth that which is next for the next level of human flourishing. You know, so many of us are feeling this impulse, this calling to realize our deeper potentials. I would even guess that everybody that's listening to this series is awake to that within themselves at some level. And yet to realize our own destiny, both our individual destinies and our collective destiny together, is really all about creating the future of our world and bringing forth that which does not yet exist, right? Pioneering into the world that which is kind of in the unmanifest potentials that we can sense right now. We might not even be able to even name exactly what it is because we have no reference point for it. And, you know, the challenges and the problems that we're facing in our world are not due to a lack of resources. What is going to really bring forth the greatest possibilities of culture has to do with up-leveling how we're in relationship with each other, because that's where the solutions that we're looking for are going to be able to emerge in our ability to come together, to think together, to collaborate, to co-create, and yet we don't have the structures in our prevailing ways of relating to be able to realize these deeper potentials. So in order to become the co-creative partners to bring forth this future that's calling to us, we actually need to begin to pioneer this new model of co-creation that's really tapping into this unleashing the power of the collective field. See, the kitty's getting all excited now in the background. And so you mentioned also the competition between women. And we talk about that. We talk about all the things that are kind of in the collective consciousness. You know, most of us are walking around thinking that these things are personal. And if we're decent people and good people, maybe we even feel bad that we feel this way, or we kind of shame ourselves, but we think it's like a personal problem. But when we step back, we begin to see that these things are actually in the collective, and that they've been in the collective for hundreds and thousands of years, and they're passed down through the lineage, and to start to see that our job in the human chain of development, you know, where some people in the ancestors' chain, their job was to get in covered wagons and have the courage to, you know, leave their friends and families behind and go west, you know, into the great unknown, that our job is to actually leave behind the selves that we've known ourselves to be and cross the terrain of the abyss and so for the promise of, or the sense of who we might become and who we might become together. You know, that our job in the human chain of evolution is this leap in consciousness. So when you're talking about like competition between women, it's to see these things as collective. It's to begin to name them and make them conscious, and then to choose who we are in the face of that and how to be in relationship with those feelings that women have. You know, because women, you know, women are, you know, all of us really saddled in some way with the awareness that even though, you know, we have this image of no hierarchy, many of us, there really is kind of a covert hierarchy in the culture of women. And so, you know, the lived experience of most women is we walk into a room and we kind of scan the room, like who's the youngest, who's the thinnest, who's the prettiest, who's the sexiest, where do I fall in the hierarchy, who has the alpha male on her arm, you know, and it's like this covert valuing system that's going on. And it's pretty chronic and pretty rampant. And some of us in relationship to that have difficulties with feeling inferior to other women, and then some of us have difficulties in feeling superior to other women, and so we're looking to make these things conscious, and because inside of that, most women will contract and not really become themselves fully, because they don't want to offend other women, they don't want to be alone, they don't want to alienate or risk, you know, having other women feel bad, and so there'll be this contraction of our energy or a dimming down, we call it, and so what we're talking about is we make these things conscious. And then we say, well, you know, if you're feeling inferior, then what you want to do is to really recognize that those feelings of envy are really the part of you that needs to be sponsored, and that is the part that wants that too, that's calling for the development of those things too, of your own radiance, of your own charisma, of your own shining fully, of your own ability to cultivate a great relationship. And to see and to bless that other woman and love that other woman for the modeling that it's possible. And then if you have problems with, you know, the other realm of being superior, to start to step into, up level into this sense of being, you know, almost noble about that, the gifts that you have, and to see it as an offering to other women and to begin to really stand for the evolution and the shining of all women and to really take that on in a very generous, beautiful way, and to start to extend and expand your love. And so it's this ability for women to really start to stand with and for each other for the full shining of each woman. So we definitely have that in our community as one of our ways of being, for sure. And I think for many women, it's really this just deep liberation to go into a community where there are other women who are standing with them and for them and encouraging them to really be authentically who they are, full out from the deepest truth of themselves, and to shine their gifts and to be transparent and to be authentic. It's just quite an extraordinary field, collective field that we have really generated. And I think Claire and I are both very, very proud of it. And as I said before, it really comes out of our relationship and what we discovered together when we started working together 6 years ago. You know, Claire and I had both been developing our own gifts and our own, you know, talents, and working on ourselves and in therapy and, you know, running around the planet doing different transformative classes and courses and all sorts of things. And yet, still, there was this experience of not of there being this gap between, you know, our own experience of like the potentials of our lives and that were calling to us and the actual lived experience that we were having. And so, you know, this experience of still these false beliefs about ourselves, you know, I'm invisible, I'm not valuable, I'm not enough, were kind of, they were still in many ways running the show. And one of the critical things that we really realized is in why we need each other to become ourselves fully has to do with the understanding that we developed inside of our relationship when we took this stand for each other. You know, it's not acceptable for me, Claire, that you're feeling having this invisibility chronically be the glass ceiling on your life. And she's saying to me, it's not acceptable to me that you would devalue yourself or feel devalued by, you know, in the world and your communities, and have this glass ceiling after all these years and who you really are. And so we up-leveled the field, you know, and we created this experience. And what we found is that we realized in our teaching, we kind of developed this system. We realized that, you know, all of these beliefs, I'm not valuable, I'm not safe, I'm not wanted. They were created in relationship. Yeah, you know, they're not. They weren't just, you know, somehow I was born with that. They were created in relationship primarily.
And maybe need to be healed in relationship,
they
too.
They need to be evolved in relationship.
Uh-huh.
They need to be evolved in relationship. And that's the critical thing. And we have not, that's why in isolation, you know, writing in our journals and having insight upon insight upon insight is going to be just part of it, but it's not going to deliver us beyond the patterns of the past. And that's why no matter how hard we've been efforting and trying and working, we keep running up against the same pattern over and over again. Because we actually need to develop, identity is transformed in relationship. Right? And these things are very identity-based. And in, you know, we have three power bases in the work. The first power base, there's this core shift in our relationship with ourselves and our ability to change our lives. And the second power base is the core shift in our approach to really creating our lives in partnership with this force and field of life greater than ourselves in order to navigate our way towards the realization of our highest destinies. And then the third power base has to do with how we're in relationship with each other. And so, you know, we really need to learn to create relationships with each other in a way that allows us to come together and collaborate and create inside of a new system of leadership, as you called it at the beginning of the call. And so we're really wanting to create, we're wanting to create what we call evolutionary partnerships with each other, which is a very different way of being in relationship to each other than we normally are. So normally we're, you know, in relationship with our friends, we say, you know, with our girlfriends, or we could say in the locker room, you know, in a particular way, and particularly for women, the goal of relationship is really to kind of, you know, feel safe and to feel contained and to feel secure. And really, one could say that the goal of relationship is comfort inside of most normal relationships, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is almost like the absence of a negative rather than the presence of a positive sometimes, uh-huh?
Well, I think that, you know, we're all for comfort and we're all for safety, but I think there's a cost to that way of relating that's very, very deep, you know, because inside of that, we're left with ways of being where we're the relationship is always dependent upon affirming each other's self-image, for instance. You know, or validating whatever
right.
the other person's feeling without
right,
actually
right.
challenging
which keeps things in a very limited range.
Very limited range, and actually stops growth and development. It actually stunts
uh-huh.
growth and development. This is why so many of us are feeling the tension, like I have this impulse to evolve, but somehow when I go back into my family, I'm just not, I'm out of sync with people, and I feel disempowered.
So this is about being a stand for one another, but not being a stand for one another's comfort and self-image.
Well, the goal is going to be different. The goal of the relationship is growth and evolution, right? And so
it's a partnership in which that higher commitment to this greater principle and maybe being even of service is the context. So it's not like a deal between two egos in the same way.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Right, there's this permission that we give each other to hold each other accountable for to become the people we would need to be in order to fulfill on the visions of our life, the callings upon our lives.
You know, one of the things that I think pervades our culture altogether is this whole model that we're fundamentally in competition with one another, that there's not enough to go around, and that we can form alliances, we can have our special friends and our people that we support, but that the larger field is a competitive field, and that, you know, somehow that principle tends to limit us in a very profound way. And I think my dearest hope is that there is a key in your work to a different kind of collaboration that empowers, where we are each empowered through our care for one another, such that we can transcend that pattern and be more effective, so that collaboration can compete with competition, in effect, so that we're more successful even in this so-called competitive domain through operating in a non-zero-sum way as a stand for one another. And I suspect that it has to begin with women, because in some ways a certain social power has, you know, men are powerful in a lot of ways, but in this liberated society, in the social cue world, I think women in a way hold the upper hand. And for you guys to spring something new that's really generous in this way, I don't know, I hold some hope that it can tip the game, and I'm curious to probe into how that might happen.
Beautiful. The Latin root for the word competition is to strive together. And I think it is a noble striving that happens inside of evolutionary partnerships. And I think this is waking up, Terry, in all of us, but I do see women, I think Claire and I see women as the leaders of the conversation, of needing to lead the conversation, because women traditionally have been the keepers of relatedness. And the power that's really waking up inside of us is the power of relationship. And so whether that's innate to women's nature or whether that's just because for thousands of years that's been the way it is, so we're kind of coded for it at this point, it's in our lineage, I don't know. I know there's debate about it. I don't think that we need to know that in order to just wake up and be responsible for it. And that's really where we're, you know, where we're taking the lead on this, because we actually need, all of us, to begin to cultivate relationships that are organized around growth and evolution, that have shared agreements that really reflect this orientation, and to begin to be, rather than be reactive in relationship to each other, to start to be generative in relationship, and to really come into the true purpose of relationship, which is, you know, inside of standing really with and for each other, and standing to learn to co-create together, we learn the skills of how to think together and how to bring forth the higher levels of creativity and human flourishing that's really only available in the collective. You know, I love this story that it's a citation of an experiment that was done in Princeton, New Jersey, not too long ago, that reveals this phenomenon about collective, the power of the collective field, which is that they were doing this study to try and understand if there was a relationship between setting an intention and an outcome that was produced, and they were using a random numbers machine. And so they would have a person in there, you know, thinking and intending a particular number, and then looking at what number came up in the numbers machine. And they actually did prove that intention impacts outcome. But what they discovered in the experiment that they were not even looking for when they went in was really kind of startling. And that is, when bonded groups of people would intend on a particular, set an intention together on a particular number, that it was 6 times more likely to happen than if an individual was doing it.
So intention has an influence, but the coherent intention of a group of bonded people is way, way more potent.
Way more potent. That's right. So we really want to look at it. So this is no small matter when we're talking about, you know, the way that we're in relationship with each other, that we're like affirming each other's self-image, or we're going to not tell the truth, really, you know, to each other, because we want to, you know, really just validate the other person, and, you know, we're going to just, you know, bond
well,
over maybe
so much work for a group of people to build enough safety to feel like it's okay to intrude powerfully and be
great.
And have that not really, you know, cause a contraction in the field.
Well, and this is the dilemma, because there's unspoken contracts in relationship. Right, so that the contract of most relationships is, you know, we affirm each other. We just take each other's perspective. That's what it looks like to have my back and be, you know, for me. And so it's literally a different agreement to have an evolutionary partnership. So that's why we.
So it's a way of having each other's back that's not the conventional way.
No, and there has to be a mutual permission given to hold each other accountable. So there's an aligning on a shared vision, and that vision is greater than the need for comfort and safety. And not everyone's going to enter into this agreement with you. You know, and there's specific people that we, you know, have formed these evolutionary relationships with. And certainly in our, you know, in our community, in this mastery program that's coming up, we have this all structured out. We have these agreements all set out that really clearly foster the container from which to really flourish and thrive, because inside of the container of those relationships, we can take the kinds of risks we would need to take in order to make that leap over the abyss of, you know, who we've always known ourselves to be, for the possibility of who we're called to become. And it's very scary because in some ways, particularly for women who are so anchored in relationship and identified with relationship, it's very scary to really take on our own development in that way, because we're afraid of losing, of being alone and losing our relationships. And so, inside of these evolutionary partnerships, we're going to give each other permission to hold each other accountable to being who we would need to be being. So, you know, I love this. Craig Hamilton, who is Claire's husband, and Craig might have gotten this from Andrew Cohen, his teacher. I'm not sure where it originated, but Craig speaks about these three different groups of people. And the first group are the people in your life who are not interested at all in having any kind of relationship to growth and development. They just want, you know, rituals, and we spend Thanksgiving together, we have our holidays, we have our, you know, our bowling club or whatever that is, joining the relationship and creating comfort and cohesion and in life. And but they're not interested, and they're never going to be interested. And then there's the people who are kind of interested, you know, that's your Aunt Millie, like the one person you can talk to at Thanksgiving about what you're up to, really. But maybe she's not going to live that way or take that on too, but she can listen to it and she can support you and she doesn't, you know, start to roll her eyes when you're talking about it. And then there are those in your life that are actually going to step up into this relationship with you. And those relationships are really based upon these shared agreements to take on being in this evolutionary partnership. And that's the shared agreement of really organizing the relationship around growth and evolution inside of a larger vision. Right? And so what we're saying too is all of them are beautiful and all of them are necessary. So it's like, don't divorce your husband when you're hearing this conversation because he's not going to step into evolutionary partnership with you, or don't dump your oldest friends now. But you want to be clear and you want to consciously form those kinds of relationships, and we encourage people to really, you know, step back, look at your closest relationships, notice what each relationship is organized around, and ask yourself, does this person really stand with me and for me in what it is that I'm striving to become in my life in order to realize my greater potentials and participate in the evolution of consciousness and culture? Do they have permission to hold me accountable to being my very best self in order for me to become the woman that I am called to become? And those relationships are absolutely critical for us to form.
And those relationships are on behalf of our growth, but they're also in service to something bigger than ourselves, I guess.
Yeah.
I would think that would be important. I mean, to just, you know, growth for growth's sake, like I want to be the best version of me possible, is I really feel that self-actualizing impulse, but I also feel this impulse to contribute, you know, that it can't be about me. You know, it has to be about that larger, and to me, this larger evolutionary process, it's not just humanity even, it's kind of the vitality of that which is best in us continuing to grow and thrive. If you don't grow, you die. And that sense that we're contributing to the essential growth of the vitality of that which has given birth to what's best in us, that inspires me so much. So my growth isn't just for me, it's in service of that. And commitments to another who gets that and who wants me to make a contribution, then it's a really electric field. It's full of...
Very electric, very alive. That's so true.
Yeah.
And, you know, inside of this masculine paradigm that we're all in, and when I say that as a woman, as the leader of the co-leader of the Feminine Power Global Community, I'm not saying that as an oppressed woman who's victimized by that. You know, we're all in the masculine paradigm of power. You know, we're all dismissing and diminishing the feminine within ourselves, and we've kind of collectively been inside of that for a while now. So, but inside of this kind of paradigm of power, we are all kind of alone to bring forth the greater potentials of our lives. And so we will play a much smaller game than is really possible, right? So inside of like recognizing that we can actually join together and come together inside of this larger vision, this vital, alive, dynamic field of co-creation, we can actually step into the biggest game that we can possibly play. We can actually do that because we recognize that I don't have to do this all by myself. And so that becomes really, when we're talking about the spiritual practice of the growth and development, in order to realize these greater potentials, we must develop ourselves and our own skills and capacities in being able to come together and form these collaborative relationships, which we have no modeling for. We really have no modeling for this. We can't go back to the old paradigm of power to really be looking at how that we would need to be in relationship to bring forth the higher level of human flourishing that's calling to us right now. You know, inside of... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, we're talking about this across that gender divide. I'm a man. I'm not in the feminine power.
Right.
And I had some interesting exchanges with Claire when I interviewed her about the dynamics of a new kind of co-creative partnership between men and women and how we can navigate what's become in some ways a much freer and healthier field, but in other ways is very complicated and kind of stiff. And how can we break through that into a new domain of real brotherhood and sisterhood, where love can flow again in a way that is not kind of intimidated by all the complexities of the sexual revolution and the power dynamics and the I think that also the subtext of competition among men and among women play into what goes on between men and women. I'm hopeful that we may be able to turn an important cultural corner there, and I just want to ask what your intuitions are. You're almost standing in this you're standing in the place where the river's really flowing fast relative to this issue, and mm-hmm. I wonder what you're picking up in your antenna as you tune in.
Oh, I love how the river is flowing fast, isn't it, though? And you know, many people are feeling kind of lost in this sea, this changing sea all the time, and tossed every which way because the old rules don't really work anymore, and yet the new is not yet in place. And I think that we have been focusing on developing ourselves as women so that we can really come powerfully into relationship with men, and to really leave behind coming into relationship to, you know, as little girls and start to show up as grown women who are really coming into partner to co-create the future of our world. And it's ours to pioneer. You know, I'm thrilled that we're at this level of the conversation. This is a very exciting time to be alive where we get to actually make it up and create it and forge it together. And I'm particularly thrilled to be speaking with you, Terry, because I know that you're one of these men. You're one of these men that this is going to happen with and that is happening with. And I'm actually wanting to create something. I think Claire and I are very much wanting to create something where we begin to dialogue about this and to invite feedback and participation about what's really emerging So that, because the old paradigm is, you know, the one person gets to lead and the other person in the partnership is the support person. And then, you know, many women are in crisis because they feel, you know, they deeply desire and long for relationship, and yet at the same time they're unwilling to be disappeared. And yet that's not something that someone else is doing to us. It's the structures in our own consciousness. You know, if we look at all of our modeling for what it is to be a good wife or a good woman in relationship, it's to empower your man. And so there's like a self-betrayal that happens with that. And these kinds of conflicts to develop within ourselves the capacity to presence our own visibility, to hold our own value, and to show up in relationship not as a power struggle, but inside of being able to mutually empower each other. And to we need to evolve this in relationship to each other. And I know that you're one of the men, and many of the men listening to this call, you are the men to be evolving this right along with us. And definitely, I'm hoping that that's an invitation to somehow create a structure for us to do this.
Cool. Well, that's a great, you know, that is, something came up. It was around awakening to a level of choice and self-empowerment that came up when I was talking with Claire. And we were realizing that this was such a key issue for men too, and that you were tackling it in your work with women, but that in another context, perhaps some of the work you're doing would have a different flavor and maybe be fruitful in different ways with groups of men and women.
Well, and we're talking about evolutionary partnerships, you know, with men and women, and really looking at, you know, feeding each other's power inside of standing with and for each other, and to realize the greater potentials of our lives. That is the new model of relationship, and it is a very big shift, because all of our Cinderella myths, which impact both men and women, are all about living happily ever after. And so that means that relationship is then, the success of relationship is defined by the longevity of the relationship. But that's inside of an evolutionary partnership. You're not going to define the success of the relationship that way. Right, and which might mean that there are, we need to find a way to wholesomely part from one another in ways that bring honor and dignity, and even, you know, celebrate the gains made, and to release each other with almost the same level of magic and the sacred with which we're forming relationships. Those are the kinds of things that we need to evolve inside of really standing together in the larger picture of causing human flourishing.
That's a paradigm buster.
It's a big paradigm shift. Big paradigm shift. Because the whole goal of relationship shift.
I'm torn here, because I'm very fascinated with what we're getting into. But I see that the big hand is on the little past the 12 now. And
into pumpkins.
Yeah, it's my obligation here to open it up so that we can invite the participation of the many people who are here with us. So if you're listening via the web, this is the time when you are invited to go ahead and type out a concise question in the instant teleseminar window. And while you're doing that, I have a few things I want to let everybody know about. First, thank you to the presenters of this series, Integral Spiritual Practice and Evolving Wisdom. Beyond Awakening is also made possible and is presented free of charge by the generosity of our many wonderful sponsors, including the new movie called Letting Go, that will entertain and delight you and exponentially guide you into uncovering and living the truth of who you are. It's designed to support the worldwide awakening to truth that is already sweeping the planet. If you are already exploring the non-dual path, then you'll find its insights and perspectives enlightening and refreshing. It also gives you powerful tools to use to introduce non-duality to those around you. Letting Go will give you practical tools that you can use every day to let go of the anxiety, anger, frustration, and limiting emotions that prevent you from recognizing your true nature and that cause you to re-identify with the dream. As you watch this movie, it will make you laugh and cry as it deepens your understanding and openness to your own intuitive knowledge. To order the film, visit lettinggo.tv/movieDVD. lettinggo.tv/movieDVD. And BeliefNet Did you know that BeliefNet.com exists to help people like you find and walk a spiritual path that brings comfort, hope, clarity, strength, and happiness? As the largest spiritual website, not only does BeliefNet offer inspiring devotional tools, access to the best spiritual teachers and clergy in the world, and thought-provoking commentaries, you'll also experience the most supportive online community around. Looking for daily support? Sign up now for any BeliefNet newsletter and receive a daily dose of wisdom, humor, inspiration, and more. Visit BeliefNet.com today. And especially today, our sisters in evolution at Feminine Power. Now, this is what we've just been talking about. This is where evolutionary women around the world are waking up to the extraordinary and committed passion of their feminine power and capacity for co-creative partnership. So you can find out even more, although we're getting into it in some depth with Catherine right now, about the acclaimed work of Catherine Woodward Thomas and Claire Zammit, and you can download a free 75-minute audio introduction. This is at femininepower.com. It's titled The Keys to Feminine Power, Awakening the Three Power Bases of the New Co-Creative Feminine. So look online at femininepower.com. And Catherine, you have a mastery course beginning, what is it, next week? Or?
Yes, it's October 19th is when the mastery course begins, and we're just finishing up. We brought 2,000 women this summer through our 7-week Feminine Power introductory course. And so we're engaged in the enrollment process right now for the mastery program with them, and then we're going to be opening up to the larger community next week and letting everyone know about the mastery program, because you can come in if you've not yet done the 7-week course. You get the audios for that course, so you have the background of that course, and then you can just come right into the mastery program. So if you sign up for the Keys to Feminine Power, this audio, you will be next week hearing about the mastery program.
I see. Great. Interested. Okay, good. So there is a way in, even though it's kind of time to act. Okay.
Yes.
Well, finally, this Sunday, in just 5 days, and this will be at 11 a.m. Pacific time instead of 5 p.m., please be sure to tune in to the next dialogue I'll be having in the Beyond Awakening series. I'll be talking with Thomas Hubel, who not all of us Americans have heard of him yet, but he is an amazing fellow. He's an innovative spiritual teacher who's been electrifying the German-speaking world. And I was his guest earlier this summer at the Celebrate Life Festival, where some 1,200 people gathered for 10 days, an amazing spiritual festival. And he's really creating an amazing integral upwelling of spirituality in the German-speaking countries. Our dialogue is going to be about a spirituality that creates the future. So we'll be exploring the idea of spirituality as an inner science with its own forms of competence and the potentials for the emergence of a new kind of sangha among sanghas, which can include a community of fellowship among spiritual teachers. So, wonderful. I want to take a look at the questions people have written in. Let me look. This is interesting. Sam Gavala from Mercer Island, Washington asks, each one of us was born from a physical relationship between a man and a woman. What are your thoughts about an integrative movement that focuses on the relationship between a man and a woman or a couple? Would you agree that integral relationships start with couples as the collaborative nucleus from which the family, community, and social fabric evolves?
Oh, well, yes and no. Yes, certainly, because, that is what most of us are drawn to, is the intimate relationship, a coupling relationship, whether that's a woman and a man or two women and two men. As our primary bonded relationship, most of us are are either in that or you know, contemplating creating that. But I also think that there's a new way of being in relationship that's really critical for our development, which has to do with these communities and the way that we're going to foster our development collectively together. And I think, you know, it's interesting, Claire and I joke a lot about how we never would have put each other on our vision boards, you know. It's like it never would have occurred to me to put a picture of myself with another woman who's not a lover, who's, you know, my teaching partner, and it just never occurred to me. So there is something that's waking up, this new model of relationships, and it's coming in many different forms. And I did write the book Calling in the One, but I think it's Calling in the Ones, those evolutionary partnerships that come in many different ways and forms. And so it's looking to do that across the board, not just with one primary partner, but I think that we are all needing each other in a very real way in order to evolve. What do you think about that, Terry?
Well, you know, we're in a time in which identifying a single paradigm and saying that it is the most essential tends then to exclude anybody who doesn't fit that pattern. And that's, so I'm reluctant, but I certainly can appreciate he's right. All of us came out of that sexual union, and there is something just totally primal about that sense of the mommy and the daddy and the baby. You know, there's a kind of family, the loving family is an archetype even of many spiritual traditions. So there's something in all of us that is evoked by that, and when that can be full and beautiful and people can stay together for decades and decades and take those pictures with, you know, 40 great-grandchildren, you know, all gathered around, that's a beautiful thing. And this, I don't think anything in any of us wants to take anything away from that. But I think to celebrate it as if it is the exclusive highest destination for everyone really sells us short, because clearly it hasn't. In some ways, we've seen a breakdown of family. Some people say that that's a terrible thing, but maybe something exciting and important is emerging. And my sense is that there is, and that the kind of stretch toward a co-creative partnership that's much more flexible that you're talking about here is much more the reality of the lives of most of the people who are consciously striving. You know, we used to, in Fiddler on the Roof, they had that song, Do You Love Me? And the woman says, what? I've born your kids, I've washed your clothes, I've fed you dinner. You ask if I love you, what does that have to do with it? And, you know, today, instead of just wanting kind of the deal, the old-fashioned partnership that they did in the shtetls in Russia, we want to be absolutely in love like the troubadours sung about, and we want to go through transformations, and we want to be both go through them at the same time and fall in love again, you know, like many times in one lifetime and perfectly track one another. And that rarely is people's experience. And so many people do go through a series of relationships that are beautiful. And that image that you offered of celebrating a transition out of a relationship just as fully as we might celebrate a transition into, you know, the courtship could be, maybe there could be a way of looking at an ending not as if it were a failure, but as the next positive transition. I really liked that. And I feel... We need models that can celebrate all the different ways we relate, don't we?
Absolutely. I think so. And I just think of my beautiful friend, Sister Judy, who, you know, who's been a nun for 50-something years, you know, and her deep life of devotion and the contribution that she's made to, you know, to so many lives. And so there are different ways that we're called into relationship with each other, and all of them hold potential for deep growth and development. But I also recognize that there's something very beautiful, Sam, in what you're asking about. And it feels clear to me that there's something that you're being called to create in collaboration and with this kind of sacred masculine and feminine dance, and really want to encourage that, because that is certainly an area that we collectively need to really take on evolving as well.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we can't go on that long with all these questions, but that was really rich and fun.
Okay.
Here's a really interesting question. Padmini in the East Bay, in the San Francisco area, asks, this ability to affirm each other and to relate to each other holding space for the evolving self. Isn't this what gurus and spiritual teachers traditionally do? Isn't this part of the guru-student relationship, the teacher-student relationship, except it usually operates in one direction from the teacher to the student?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe are you saying now that what you're trying to midwife through is going bi-directional so that we can actually learn to receive that holding and also give it to each other, holding space for each other's evolved self?
No, that's great. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I can certainly understand that connection, Padmini. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. But I think what we're also talking about in this conversation is the collective field, where development is not just happening and maybe a transmission from a guru to a student, or you know, the individual awakening path to a higher state of consciousness. But it's almost what we might call an awakening to a relational enlightenment, the beginnings of that conversation, which I think Andrew Cohen coined that phrase, and I just love it. I'm so fascinated with it and really want to, you know, push into that and discover what that would mean, this relational enlightenment. But I think that it has to do with this collective field that's really going to enable us to bring forth the highest possibilities that are present for our human flourishing and thriving.
Thank you. Well, I think it's time for us to go to the phones, and we've had some requests about questions. I wish we had time to go on at great length, but we won't. So if you have a question, please make sure it's a question rather than a commentary, and try to keep it direct and to the point. You can raise your hand by pressing *2 on your telephone. And when we do that, please ask your question, and we'll take your answer rather than engaging in a long dialogue. But you're invited right now to go ahead and raise your hands. And anybody who has a question for Catherine, you know, we'd love to hear that. And while we're going to that, I want to go back and ask a question from Bob in Brooklyn. Bob asks, isn't the next evolutionary step for human relationship to be, as co-creators, a more intentional community? What are the risks, though, of co-creating an authentic community? What are the first steps that need to be taken to actually start a genuine community of equal feminine and masculine qualities? And what can we do as humans to truly break down the primordial divide between women and men?
Look at the interest in this. Isn't this great? This is really informing us, Terry, that we need to create a space for dialogue between men and women. Bob, I love Brooklyn. I lived in Brooklyn in my early 20s. And so just please say hi to kiss the ground of Brooklyn for me. I think, you know, as I was saying before, it's not just coming together in community. And I like that you use the word intentional. So that implies that we're coming together inside of a certain shared vision and certain values that we're aligned on. And that's going to be really critical to being able to create the kind of cohesion in the community that creates this container for us to kind of deconstruct who we've been for and be able to really allow for the flourishing of the potentials of people. But I also think that very critically, we need to put in place these shared agreements, which have to do with ways that we're in relationship with each other. And certainly in the courses that Claire and I create, we have very specific ways that we're engaging with each other that really foster this level of development and growth. And, you know, some of them are as simple as, you know, we speak from a place of personal responsibility, you know, that we really look to see everything as an opportunity for our own growth and development, and we'll also engage things like each member of the community really standing to ensure the safety and the cohesion in the community. So these are things that people hold each other accountable to, right? So the only way others can hold us accountable is if we're holding ourselves accountable to it, and then it's just pointing out each other's blind spots or really supporting each other to, you know, really live our own commitment that's really real for us and very, very much the thing that we're aligned on within ourselves already.
Mm.
So,
but I mean, it would be possible for somebody to just be a little crazy or
well,
you know, complicated.
If someone
so they
is crazy and unkind, they're going to not be able to maintain the agreements.
I see.
Right, and then
so by having clear agreements, you create a certain standard that at least everybody is capable of sincerely and authentically participating.
Exactly. You really have to be well enough to be able to show up. And now, do we do the agreements perfect? No, because we're not there in consciousness yet. Most of us are walking around completely victimized by life, you know. We're in a victimized relationship with life. That's kind of where we are collectively. So it's no small thing to take on breaking up victimization and to speak in the community from a place of self-responsibility. That's something that we need to develop. So we come together and we practice, and we're flawed and we fail all the time. And there's certainly room for that as long as then, you know, we take ownership and responsibility and make the amends by up-leveling our game and by showing up differently from now on to the best of our ability and really strive and, like, genuine striving.
Beautiful. Well, we have a question here from someone in Hilo, Hawaii. I don't have your name, but you're unmuted. Please join us. What's your name? Hello, you're live. Someone.
Hi,
from...
this is Linda.
Hi, Linda. Welcome.
Hi, Linda.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm very fascinated with this conversation. It's just, oh my gosh, about time. So a question that I've got, and I know that you've both spoken to it to some extent, but to clarify, you know, kind of like really clearly and succinctly, maybe, like, how can we have these relationships between men and women? How do we coax our current relationship partner who may not be in the same place we are, maybe more traditional? My partner, for instance, is adorable, awesome, and wonderful, and he's more traditional. And I really love to help coax or move our relationship in the direction of everything that you're talking about. But I'm not sure how...
Great, Linda. Yes, well, beautiful. I mean, I think there's a getting related to what he most deeply cares about, you know, that's the most sacred kind of noble purpose, what his mission is. And it's to really join in, because you want to be shared, you want to be standing in a shared vision and shared values, so that you want to get related to the deepest level, that which is most sacred to each of you. And usually, you know, people on some level have some kind of a deep alignment with wanting good for other people, wanting good for the world. And so there's an alignment that you both take on to really support the development, to have the fullest expression of that. So I think where you begin, Linda, is you really ask him on a very deep level what is most meaningful to him, that which is most sacred, and his noble mission in life. And you get very, very related. And then you share with him yours. And you invite him into this conversation around really supporting you to become your most evolved self in order to realize these greater potentials that you're holding. And you ask him if he's willing to have that be mutual, so that you might also take that on with him. And I think anytime we're asking someone to join with us inside of an evolutionary partnership, we want to share with them from our heart why we're choosing them. And we don't want to skip over this, because I've heard people say sometimes, well, I asked my friend, but she thought I was being critical, like she wasn't okay the way she was. So you want to go to the person and you want to say, look, I'm feeling called to really grow and expand. And I need partnership in order to really do that. And I can't think of anyone on the planet I'd rather invite into this partnership with me than you, because you are the person I admire the most, I deeply love the most, I trust you, or I wish I want to be you when I grow up, or whatever that conversation is. So you tell them why you're choosing them. And then you give them room to say no, and you say, you know, it might not be something that's calling to you, and it's fine to say no, but this is what I'm really wanting, and I want to give you permission to hold me accountable, and I want to know if you're up, if that inspires you to do that mutually. Is that helpful?
It is. And if they happen to say no, then what?
Well, I think it's important for you to honor that. And to realize that that's going to be like a limit on where that particular relationship can go as it relates to you really realizing the greater potentials on your life. But, you know, we're not advocates for ending relationships because people don't enter into evolutionary partnerships with us. You would, you know, then obviously feel somewhat disappointed, but it's information that you need to know about what's most important to him. And some people do have a mission in life to, you know, kind of be more comfortable. That's what their mission is. And I think those are critical in terms of the level of commitment and investment that we're going to make into the relationship. So that might be a disappointment, but it would be really important information for you to know how to navigate the relationship from here on out. And you might be able to choose a relationship for comfort because it might be that in order for you to realize the greater potentials of your life, you know, that there's got to be like some anchor or home base for you to return to. But we say that we either want to, you know, for those relationships that are not going to be evolutionary partnerships, you know, we either want to adjust our expectations or we want to, you know, graduate ourselves as opposed to blow up the relationship, just kind of graduate ourselves and have that relationship take its rightful place in our lives.
Thank you so much.
That's beautiful. You know, and I have one little thought that might make a contribution there, which is that sometimes that kind of conversation you described might be one to have in baby steps across a series of maybe, you know, three or four conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get where you need to go, but not all at once.
Great, for sure.
Yeah. You know, I want to go back here to we do have space for some more hands up, but I've got a question I want to pull in here, which is, this is from Olaf Sander in Langley, Washington. What is your experience of differences in power between women in different countries, especially between the United States and Northern Europe?
We're really learning about that because when we opened up our first teleclass, the Feminine Power 7 Week in June, we had women from 36 different countries in that class. And so what we discovered is that there is this deep yearning to grow and develop that's really waking up globally for women. And it's being expressed at different levels as is appropriate to the culture and the value system within the culture that the women are from. And for some women, it's quite challenging because they feel very alone in their countries. For instance, we've had some women from Japan really hungering for this conversation. And yet very, you know, challenged in terms of, you know, some of the assumptions that the Western woman is inside of about power and what it looks like to be a leader. And so, you know, we're very tender to those conversations. I would say that I'm really a little bit of a student of how this conversation is waking up with women on these different levels around the world, because I think that, you know, obviously one of our flaws in our Western world is the imposition of our own values on other people. And so we're really wanting to make space for women's reality and their what their lived experience is to really emerge and inform us. So we're in a place of being students. But I think most Western women are really aware that, and whether that's, you know, Northern Europe or the United States of America, are really aware that we are really the most privileged women in the course of human history, that we have more leverage more education, more time, more power than any other women who have ever walked the face of the earth, unless you want to go back to primordial days where we actually can speculate, but we don't actually, so let's take recorded human history. So I think, you know, the question is, what are we going to do with this power? What are we going to use it for? And also the calling to kind of evolve power now to a very integral system of power so that it's not actually masculine power, which is really, we kind of broad strokes define masculine power maybe as the power over the externals of life, and broad strokes the power of the feminine is the power of relatedness, and begin to not toss away the gains that women from the Western world have made in the last 50 years in being able to really master a masculine paradigm of power, but to integrate it and infuse it with the values of the feminine. And so to take all of that agency that we've been developing and to start to really serve the values of the feminine, the fostering of deeper levels of care and well-being in our world. And one of my favorite visions that we talk about in the feminine power teaching is, gosh, what would the world be like if all of us began to use that drive for accomplishment with all of that profound agency we've been developing in full commitment to fostering greater levels of well-being and greater levels of care for all of humanity. You know, that's the world we want to be living in. So it's really an integral power that we're striving towards.
Beautiful. Mm. Well, thank you so much, Catherine. I see we've run out of time.
Mm.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm sorry I wasn't able to take. I see a couple people have raised your hands, but we've run out of time. But we can all say goodbye soon. And before I do that and tell you about what's coming up next week, a few reminders. Certainly, I want you to be aware of our Facebook group at facebook.com. Search for Beyond Awakening or go to beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook. And there and on our blog, you're invited to post your comments about today's dialogue and also any suggestions or questions you have for Sunday's dialogue with Thomas Hubel. The blog address is beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. And if anybody you know might be interested in the series, please either direct them to beyondawakeningseries.com or forward them one of our emails so they can join us too. If you'd like to learn more about my work, please visit integralspiritualpractice.com. And if you're listening to this from Europe, anywhere near Germany, I'll be teaching this coming weekend in Berlin, speaking Friday night, and then teaching Saturday and Sunday. I'll also be teaching the following week in Hamburg, Essen, Tübingen, and then Frankfurt at the Herbst Akademie Power of Soul Conference the following weekend. And then the following week I'll be speaking in Stockholm on the Tuesday, I think it's the 17th. So you can find out more about that at integralspiritualpractice.com and follow the links. And finally, I want to thank some of the partners and sponsors who've made this all possible, especially Boulder Integral. If you have an important idea or project in your life that needs a jump start, whether it's the new business you've been dreaming of starting or an important initiative at your job or for your company, maybe it's a creative project like writing a book, a blog, or a screenplay, or maybe you'd like to press reset on your career and develop an entirely new vision for yourself. In any of these circumstances, please consider attending the Integral Incubator, a 5-day boot camp in Boulder, Colorado, where you'll work with Ken Wilber himself, with Jeff Salzman, and with an expert team of coaches to make your dream a reality. Find out more about the Integral Incubator at integralincubator.com. That's integralincubator.com. And Maestro Conference. Maestro Conference is a unique voice-based online collaboration platform that integrates the web and your telephone to support large-scale, real-time remote conferences, seminars, and interactive events. Using cutting-edge technology that empowers individual awareness and engagement, Maestro Conference offers a whole new way to engage people and create relationships, combining the ease of passive media and the engagement and excitement of live events. Visit them on the web at maestroconference.com. That's M-A-E-S-T-R-O, maestroconference.com. And also by our friends at Integral Enlightenment. Integral Enlightenment is an authentic, contemporary approach to spiritual practice designed to bring about a total transformation of our humanity. Founded by evolutionary pioneer Craig Hamilton, Integral Enlightenment seeks to revitalize the spiritual path to meet the evolutionary needs of humanity in the 21st century. Integral Enlightenment is a path for those of us who know deep down that spiritual life is about much more than our personal happiness or contentment. It's for those of us who feel compelled to transform ourselves in order to serve the greatest calling there is, the further evolution of life, humanity, and consciousness itself. To find out more about the work of Craig Hamilton and Integral Enlightenment, please visit integralenlightenment.com. And remember to please tune in this coming Sunday. In just 5 days, I'll be talking live from Berlin. I'll be right there in the room with innovative spiritual teacher Thomas Hubel. We'll be talking about a spirituality that creates the future. Observing the kinds of spiritualities that lead to one-sided development, we'll explore the idea of spirituality as an inner science with its own forms of competence, a competence that can earn the respect of people who have achieved objective measures of excellence in other arts and sciences. And also the potentials for the emergence of a new kind of sangha, a sangha of sanghas, a meta-sangha, including a community of fellowship among spiritual teachers. The following Sunday, October 17th, at 11 a.m. Pacific time, I'll be again broadcasting live from Germany, this time in conversation with Howard Martin and Debbie Rosman of the Institute of Heart Math. So please mark your calendars. And finally, I would like to thank you for joining me. Let's open up the phone lines and let's all say goodbye. I love to hear everybody's voices. So thank you all and goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you,
Carrie.
It was great. Bye-bye.
Okay.